Welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, high-definition camcorders. They're coming. In fact, they're here. But do you need one? And what should you be looking for? I'll be speaking with Richard Bagley. He's a writer who covers video and camcorders. He's a blogger with CamcorderInfo.com and a columnist with PCWorld.com. And he's going to catch us up with what's new and what we need to know, especially if you want to get a camcorder. And also, we'll be taking a look at what the FCC is going to do very soon about media ownership rules. Do stay tuned. So the FCC finally released its media ownership rules review proceeding, which is actually a modified, revised request for comments. And that's because about 3 years ago, in 2003, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals threw out the FCC's revised media ownership rules because the court said they weren't well-founded, they weren't well-researched, and on top of that, they're going to massively re-regulate and loosen the rules, allowing co-ownership of television stations and newspapers in a lot of cities as one of the big, big moves, as well as overall loosening ownership rules for TV stations. So this is now the opportunity for the public to get involved again. There was a massive public outpouring in 2002 when the FCC passed its original rules, the type that really the FCC had never seen before, and especially never seen before on a point of what otherwise looks like arcane policy like media ownership. So for the current review to look at these rules once again, there's a comment deadline of September 22nd, and that's actually longer than what is usually done with the FCC. It's a 60 days comment deadline, so it's 60 days for the public to go ahead and comment on things. But yet, do we have all the information? And the answer really is no. One of the big things that we're still waiting on from the FCC is the release of research reports that will get at a lot of different issues that these ownership rules are looking to address. One of the big things that popped up in the last ownership rules review back in 2002 is how does the FCC going to count access to diversity and diverse local news? The FCC wanted to count the internet and internet sites as contributing to the diversity that people receive in their local news output. So it's not just your television stations and your local newspaper, but what you might be able to get on the internet. And so one of the top things which studies are supposed to look at from the FCC are how people get news and information. Other issues are competition within types of media and across media platforms. What are the marketplace changes since the commission last reviewed its ownership rules? They're going to look at the issue of localism, or how well served local communities are by their local media. They're going to look at minority participation in today's media environment. They're going to look at independent and diverse programming in today's media environment and the impact of ownership on the production of children's and family-friendly programming. The FCC has budgeted $200,000 to complete these studies. Now, it did studies during the last ownership review back in 2002. Those studies were released in 2001, and I covered them here on the show. Actually, they were released in 2002, I'm sorry. And I covered them here on the program, and most of them were quite slanted, quite frankly. And looking at issues like diversity, again, being able to count the internet as, you know, as one part of your local media diversity, rather than just looking at the realm of radio, television, newspapers, which is what the rules that are being reviewed actually address. And in some cases, they were sort of laughable. And you can go back to the Media Geek website at MediaGeek.net. There's links right there on the front page. You can go back and read my analysis of that stuff from back in the last ownership rules review. And the comments, the rules that they're actually seeking comment on, the one that are on the chopping block right now, are the local television ownership limit. That is, how many television stations can one company own in one given local television market? They're still looking at the local radio ownership limit. And that was greatly, greatly loosened back in 1996. With the Telecommunications Act of 1996, and what allowed the creation of the Clear Channels and the Infinities of the world. Prior to that point, one company could not own 1,200 stations nationwide, and certainly couldn't own nearly half the stations or more in a given market. One of the biggest ones is a newspaper broadcast cross-ownership ban. In most markets, the same company cannot own a newspaper and a TV station. The logic behind that is that you want separate, diverse newsrooms. You don't want them combined because you feel like stories will get lost if the one editor chooses not to cover anything, or perhaps the newspaper won't cover scandals at a TV station if they are co-owned. Also, going to be looked at is a dual network ban, and that is, can NBC and CBS be co-owned? And finally, a UHF discount on the national television ownership limit. And the logic there is UHF stations typically don't have the same kind of reach or the same kind of ratings, at least in a broadcast band, not counting cable, that a VHF station has. So Channel 3 typically gets out much further than Channel 15 or Channel 17. So should they count for less when counting how many stations a particular company owns in a local, in the overall national television ownership limit? That's a lot of stuff. But you can see what is potentially here is the FCC radically rewriting and revising the ownership of our television stations, which can count to how they do news, how they do public affairs programming. If you take radio as an example, the great loosening of the ownership limits and the creation of Clear Channels decimated radio news. Back before 1996, it wasn't uncommon for a lot of radio stations to do news or for there to be competing news stations in a lot of cities. And after 1996, a lot of that just simply went away. Will the same thing happen to TV stations? And the FCC is looking for your comments, and you can file them right now. I've got instructions there at MediaGeek.net. You can also go to StopBigMedia.com for easy instructions for filing your comments. But part of this process, there's supposed to be a half dozen public hearings, as promised by FCC Chairman Martin. Now, back in the last proceeding, Chairman Powell only held one public hearing, and he had to have his arm twisted to do that, and that got him a lot of flack both from public interest groups and from members of the Republican Party who were upset with his bull in a china shop tactics for pushing through the loosened FCC media ownership rules that he wanted to see happen. So a half dozen is more than what happened before, but they still haven't yet been scheduled. We don't know where they're going to happen, and we also don't know if they're going to happen before the comment deadline. And while certainly the public hearings are an opportunity for the public to address the FCC directly and to speak directly to the FCC, they also ought to be for members of the public to hear more about the issues and learn more about the issues. These ought to be opportunities for members of the public to better inform themselves so they can actually make better comments back to the FCC. But if the comment deadline will have already passed by the time a forum happens in your particular area, then will you be able to really make the best comments that you can? I think that's really important. And if the FCC hasn't released its research reports, and we still haven't heard when they'll happen, then you really won't have all the information available to you to actually take on the FCC's research and to either criticize it or analyze it, and to really make the most reasoned comments to the FCC rather than just simply, oh, I don't want more big media. Certainly, a lot of the career bureaucrats at the FCC would rather read, well, here's where I see the flaws in the research. Here's what I think would be better. Here's what I would like to see. And this is why I like to see it. And it's either backed up in your own research or it's not backed up in your own research, or here's a flaw in your own research. And if those reports aren't available to us before the September 22nd comment deadline, then really the public doesn't have all the necessary information and data to make good comments and to participate. There is one more deadline after that for comments. It's November 21st, again, a 60-day deadline, and that's for reply comments. And the purpose of reply comments are actually for people to read comments already submitted. You might want to read the comments submitted by your local media owners as they beg and plead for more stations, especially the larger owners that may not actually be locally owned, or at least locally based. You would have an opportunity to reply to their comments and say, well, they say in my local community that we have extremely diverse media, and in fact, we don't. And let me explain to you why I think that's not true. That is the opportunity to, in that second September 22nd to November 21st window. And you're really not supposed to be filing original comments, although you can, and I'm not sure whether they get discounted or not, but that's the way it's supposed to happen. And just to show you how revved up the public is about this, already almost 30,000 comments have been filed with the FCC on this proceeding, and the comment window hadn't even been opened yet. And that's because back in June, the FCC announced that they would be opening up this proceeding very soon. And already 30,000 comments have flooded in to the FCC. So this is going to be a big deal. And again, it looks like it's a time when our very media landscape can be rewritten. And it can be rewritten as more concentrated, fewer owners, more distant corporate ownership, or it can be more responsive to its local community. And we all have an opportunity to at least tell the FCC what we think and how we think it should go down and to make good reasoned arguments. To learn how to do that, once again, go to MediaGeek.net. Also, go to StopBigMedia.net. Next up, a look at camcorders. High definition otherwise, what's available for you, anyone, who wants to become a media maker in video. This is Media Geek. Stay tuned.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. 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 Tangled up tubes.
DJ Ted Stevens. Talking about those techno internet's tubes. Ted Stevens, chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, demonstrating his intricate, highly refined knowledge of the internet's. So in the last week, Sony made a big announcement that they're bringing more high-definition camcorders down to the consumer market. High-definition camcorders that'll record to DVDs and the hard drives, and that sounds really great, especially for those people out there who've already bought high-definition televisions. I'm not yet one of them, but it's sounds like a new great future's ahead for video makers. Maybe that's true. We don't know. So I thought I'd talk to Richard Bagley. He is a blogger with CamcorderInfo.com. He's a video columnist with PC World, but I find that he has a great way of breaking down a lot of the jargon and making it very simple and understandable what kind of camcorders out there for people who want to be shooting their own video, what's useful, what's not, and really, the big one, what's good enough? It seems like the market is starting to be flooded with a bunch of high-definition camcorders that no longer cost an arm and a leg.
Absolutely, yes.
And so we're starting to see a bunch just announced this week by Sony. Do you have any details about any of them?
Yeah, I mean, Sony has launched a lot of new camcorders which use a new format called AVCHD. As far as I know, it doesn't stand for anything, but it uses this new format which uses MPEG-4 compression to put high-definition video onto either a standard DVD or onto a flash media card. So the new devices look pretty interesting.
Now, a lot of people I talk to ask me, you know, I want to start doing some video, and these DVD camcorders look really good to me because, you know, I can just take the DVD out of my camcorder and plop right into my DVD player. Is that going to be able to work with these new HD camcorders?
That's still to be determined. They won't work on normal standard definition DVD players. What Sony is saying is that they will work on newer devices. They will work, for instance, on new Blu-ray players. They will also work on the PlayStation 3 whenever they get around to launching that. And they are also going to be including software with the camcorders, which can allow you to import it into your PC, edit it, and then output it to DVD. But right now, it's a little bit, you know, up in the air to see how that's going to work out.
And that's the big thing that's always important to me, is whether or not I can get the video easily into my computer, because with standard DVDs, it's possible, but it's not always as easy as you think it should be.
No, it's still a pain. I mean, it's got a lot better in the last couple of years. A lot more of the video editing software has started to include support for directly importing video from the DVDs, but it's still a pain to do, and how it's going to work for this new format remains to be seen.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, what people really want to be able to do now with their footage is not so much just put on the DVDs to give to other people, but they want to be able to get it online, since services like YouTube allow you to pretty much do that for free. That is like the killer app for video right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I get a lot of email from people saying I want to send videos of my children's birthday party to my grandparents, that sort of thing. And, you know, it's much easier to put it online. Absolutely. These days, it's what everybody is doing.
So why do you think Sony now has decided to come up with this whole new codec, this whole new format for high-definition video? Because they've already got one, right? They've got a tape-based format called HDV.
That's right. Yes, they do have the standard HDV camcorders. I think it's kind of a little bit of a bridging thing because they have their high definition Blu-ray devices, but it's still those devices still aren't small enough that they could put those into a camcorder. So this is kind of bridging the gap between, you know, your standard DVD camcorders and the high definition players. So it's kind of bridging that space a little bit. I think that's what it is. I should also point out that it's not just Sony who's coming up with these. Sony are the first people to launch the actual devices, but the format itself was developed by Sony and Panasonic.
And Sony kind of made a big splash. Was it earlier this year or last year when they, you know, announced the first, you know, HDV high def camcorder for less than really $2,000, getting closer to $1,000.
Absolutely, the Sony HD3, which is, it has to be said, a really nice little camcorder, and it's going great guns for Sony. It's selling hugely in Japan. It's also selling very well in the US. So they've kind of really broken the market. They won't be the only people in that market for long, but, you know, they have it themselves pretty much right now.
And what do you like about the HC3?
The HC3, it's a fairly simple camcorder. You know, it shoots really nice high-definition video. It's not complicated to use. You don't need a degree in camcorderology to use it. You just kind of pick it up and shoot with it, and then play it back, and you've got high-definition video. So, you know, what's not to love in that?
And how easy is that to get into your PC or your Mac and edit it?
It's pretty easy because it uses as a standard FireWire connection, and most software these days will support HDV as well. You know, the low-end packages are starting to come out with it. Premiere Elements now supports it, so, you know, you can get a HDV editing program for under $100.
It's not too bad. So if you're willing to get in and learn a little bit of editing, it looks like it's a lot easier than it was even just a couple of years ago.
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot easier, yeah.
And so if I was someone who's looking to get a camcorder and maybe, you know, I want to use it for family stuff, but I might also want to try and use it, you know, to be creative, make some creative videos or even do some interviews. I mean, should I be looking to get a high def camcorder or should I be waiting around? You know, should I get an HDV one? Should I wait around for these new DVD ones or the new hard drive ones? What would be your recommendation?
Well, you know, the way I always put it this way with this sort of thing is, you know, if you're going to wait for the next big thing, you're never going to buy anything. You know, so if you look at the HD3, it's a nice little camcorder. If that suits what you need, buy it. You know, but the AVC HD stuff does have some interesting things. It records high-definition video onto a DVD, so, you know, it's a little easier to play back. It's pretty much a question of, the way I always think about it is, you know, what are you going to do with the video? If you're just going to play it back and that's all you ever want to do, then a DVD camcorder is fine. If you want to edit it and do other things with it and put it online and that sort of thing, then the HDV or a standard mini DV camcorder are by far easier to use because you can actually, it's much easier to edit the video and put it online.
And so mini DV isn't dead yet?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, you know, these days you can buy a mini-DV camcorder for about $300. So mini-DV is still going to be here for some time. I think that HDV is going to take away the high end a little bit from it, but there's still plenty of people who are happy to shoot in standard definition.
And it still looks pretty good.
It still looks great. I mean, you know, it's not as high resolution as high definition, but it's still good. I mean, we did a survey on camcorderinfo.com recently on the blog that I write for those guys, and you know, it was still, there was still like 50% were saying, yeah, we're not going to go high def quite yet.
And why do you think people aren't quite ready to go high def? And Camcorder Info users, are those pros? Are those amateurs? Are those like basic family users, or is it kind of everybody?
It's kind of a mixture. A lot of them are sort of the more serious amateurs, I suppose you'd call them. You know, they're people who are serious about it. They're shooting videos of their families, but they want to be able to use them for different stuff. I think the reason is because they don't see any reason to go high def. You know, it is more expensive. You know, like I said, you can buy a standard def camcorder for under $300, but the cheapest high def camcorder is $1,300. And plus, the editing is still not as easy as it is with standard definition video. It still takes a faster PC, the rendering times are longer, you know, so it's still a bit more involved than standard def. And if you're happy with standard def, you know, why throw it out? It ain't broken, so why fix it?
So if I just bought a new Mac and I'm using iMovie HD, it still might be easier to go with standard DV. It'll take more horsepower, more time to render out the high def video.
Yeah. I mean, iMovie HD is a great little program. It'll handle high-definition video, but you kind of need a little more memory, and the rendering process will take longer. So if you throw in transitions and titles and that sort of thing, it'll take longer to actually create the video in the end. So if you want something quick and easy, then, you know, just stick with standard def. And plus, of course, it's still not, you still can't really put high-definition video online in any easy way. You know, you shoot in high def and you stick it up on YouTube, it's going to come out looking the same as if you shot in standard def.
So the internet isn't quite ready to send high def bandwidth down the line to most people's homes yet.
Oh, not quite yet. I mean, there are people who are doing it. There's quite a few video podcasts who are now shooting in high def and offering that as a feed. But, you know, it still takes a lot of bandwidth to get that, and for most people, it just ain't worth it.
Now, of course, if you shoot in high def and edit in high def today, and you can only get on standard def or even lower definition on the internet now, of course, later on, you could probably, if you want to go back to that same material, put it up in high def when the internet is ready to give you that kind of speed later on.
That's absolutely true. So, you know, in a way, you are protecting yourself. And one of the nice things about the HC3 is it can shoot in high def, record it in high def, but it can then output it in standard def. So you can actually have the high def original, but then work with a standard definition when you're actually editing it. You know, so you're kind of protected for the future. That is one reason why a lot of people are going with camcorders like the HC3 right now.
Because you can still plug it into your regular standard def television and watch that footage or output it in regular DV?
Yeah, you can watch it on your standard TV, you can stick it onto a regular DVD, and it looks great, and then you've also got the high-definition original just sitting there for whenever you buy yourself a Blu-ray, DVD player, or whatever, and decide you want to re-edit your home movies.
Very cool. And so, if I'm somebody who's looking to get a new camcorder right now, and I'm thinking, you know, it may be a mini DV, it may be a HDV, it may be a high def camcorder, you know, and I want to be able to make good videos that sound good, that look good, regardless of the definition. What features do I want to be looking for?
Well, you want to be looking at the image quality that the camcorder offers. I mean, you can pick up a camcorder like the Panasonic PVGS300 for about $600, which has three CCDs, takes great-looking video, you know, so that's a real strong factor. And plus, also, you got to look at, you know, just go into a store and try the thing out, see how it feels in the hand, you know, see how heavy it is, because if you're going to be carrying around all day shooting video, you know, you want to get the one that's lightest but has the features that you need.
Okay, and what about sound? I think that's something that the people often don't think about when they're getting a camcorder.
People don't think about that. People often focus on the video, but you should think about sound because, you know, as a wise man once said, sound is more than half of the picture. You know, the built-in microphones that a lot of camcorders have these days are reasonable, but they're really not that good. You know, they pick up sound from all around. So if you're talking to somebody, you're picking up everybody else who's standing next to you and chatting away or whatever. So I, you know, we always, at Camcorder Info, we always recommend that one of the first things that you look at buying is an external, a decent microphone. And a lot of the camcorder manufacturers offer Zoom microphones these days, which, you know, when you're standing there and you zoom in on one person to, you know, take a video of them, the microphone zooms with them as well. So you pick up them as opposed to everybody else around them. That's kind of a nice feature to have.
Can you plug a microphone into any camcorder?
A lot of the lower-end camcorders don't come with an external microphone port, so that can make it a little bit difficult. Some of the manufacturers have their own proprietary ports. Sony is one company that does this. They have their own special port, and you can only use their microphones with them. That's kind of a pain, because you then got to buy their accessories.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of the way the market works, unfortunately.
So. But if you're willing to buy a Sony microphone, then you're probably okay then.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's certainly something we would definitely recommend that you factor into this. You know, it can make a big difference to a video.
And then if, you know, so let's say I go to my local electronics store and I'm trying out camcorders. Are there any brands to look for or to avoid? You know, is it like the DVD players and stuff where there's some really low end, you know, very, you know, inexpensive but not necessarily well put together camcorders out there? Or are they all kind of generally pretty good at this point?
Generally speaking, most of the camcorders we've seen are pretty good. We haven't really seen a huge clunker for some time. You know, there's four or five manufacturers who are working in this space. You really don't get the problem you get with DVD players where there's brands you've never heard of. You know, in the camcorder world, there's your Sonys, your Canons, your JVCs, and generally speaking, they're all reasonably good. You know, you're not, but you got to bear in mind what you're going to get for your money. For $300, you aren't going to get a professional camcorder. But, you know, for $300, a camcorder like the Canon Elura 100 is a nice camcorder. You know, a few years ago, that would have cost you a lot more.
Yeah, it's amazing just seeing, you know, in the difference in 6 years when I was looking at camcorders, just to get a decent mini DV model from, say, Canon, you were well over $1,000, well into $1,300.
Mm-hmm.
What now buys you a high definition camcorder with a lot of really advanced features?
Absolutely, yes. And you get a lot more for your money than you would have got a couple of years back.
And so you might be at the electronics store and be a little tempted by spending a little bit less, because you can still sometimes pick up camcorders that use analog tape formats like 8mm, Hi8, or VHSC. Is that something it's still worth trying to use?
That's pretty much of a false economy these days. You might save yourself maybe $50, but what you'll lose is the ability to so easily take the video and import it into your PC. On an analog camcorders, the quality isn't as good. You've then got to convert it from the analog to the digital format, so you may have to end up buying an additional device to do that. So it's really kind of a false economy. You know, analog is passe these days. It's really not something to be looking at.
So digital is the way to go, and it's fine to go with mini DV tape, and that still lets you bring it into your computer very easily via the FireWire port. And if you want to just bring it to your TV, the DVD is a fine way to go. But however you go, digital is the way to go.
Absolutely, yeah. This is the 21st century, man. You got to be digital.
Great. Well, Richard, I really appreciate you helping us out a little bit here with understanding a little bit about what camcorders out there and what to look for.
My pleasure, Paul.
And that's Richard Baguley, blogger with CamcorderInfo.com, also video columnist with PC World and PCWorld.com, telling us a little bit about what's available in camcorders and what's good. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm your host and producer, Paul Riesmandel, and I'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media, as well as our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net, where you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views about our media. You can also download the program at radio.MediaGeek.net or subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. That's all at MediaGeek.net. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Lowow. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some segments are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. And Media Geek is heard on 9 other community stations around North America. Media Geek is free to air on your local community radio station, too. Just drop me a line at paul@mediageek.org. That email address is also good for any comment you want to send in about the program. Once again, that's paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for